Welcome to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio on 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever across the globe you may be, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, by Amnesty International volunteers Jim Hutchings, that's me, and Mona Hill, who are part of a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're working to build a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards, thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ekwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. Today we welcome Margaret Poitras, CEO of All Nations Hope AIDS Network. Margaret has been a welcome guest in the past, and today we'll do some catching up on what's new at this invaluable agency in Regina. Welcome, Margaret.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Really good to have you here.
Welcome, Margaret.
Thank you, Mona.
And it's good to see Mona again, because Mona has been away for a few days, and I'll ask her to comment here, but I'm going to start talking about what sort of she was up to and involved in the last couple of days. It was Monday, Tuesday. And Mona went up to Beauval and Pine House Lake to be a part of the what would we call it, sort of a fact-finding mission by the people up there.
It was a public forum about the concept of nuclear waste storage in Saskatchewan.
So
at Pine House,
we had a lot of people from probably fairly. How far away was the community?
It's about a 9-hour drive, depending on the roads and depending which way you go.
I was looking at the map. Yeah. I've been to, you know, Ness Creek, and so that's close to Big River, and I know Beauval is beyond Big River.
Yeah, it's a beautiful countryside, absolutely beautiful. Around Beauval, there's a lot of muskegs, so there's a lot of giant mosquitoes. And then another hour and a half to 2-hour drive, depending on the road, north of that is Pine House. And it's the very last town on that road.
You're at the end
at
of the line.
Lake.
Yeah.
And I met some wonderful people at the public forum. And so go ahead and tell us what you've found out there, Jim.
Okay.
And then
well,
I'll come back and talk about it.
One of the things that they decided, what they were going to do after this forum and what has already started, I think you were there at the beginning of it at Pine House, or did you?
At the forum?
Yeah, the walk is what I'm thinking of.
The walk started on the Wednesday morning.
Okay.
Yeah, but the forum was held on the Tuesday.
Right.
And there was also a previous forum. That those of our listeners who are regular listeners know that there was a forum at the end of May or the beginning of June in Beauval, and it was the same type of forum, and it was about whether or not people actually want to entertain the idea of having nuclear storage in Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, this is a statement from the Facebook page 7,000 Generations Walk Against Nuclear Power. I believe.
Nuclear waste. Right.
Yeah. Not so much power, but what we're going to do. Okay. Anyway, here's from the page, and they're saying the purpose of our walk is to wake people up to the reality that northern Saskatchewan is being targeted to store millions of used nuclear bundles, which would be highly radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years. So they're carrying a petition to the legislature that people are going to sign, and I imagine that as they go through the various communities along the way, those people in those communities will have the opportunity to sign and find out what's going on. And they go on to say they're sharing an instinct to protect our water from an inevitable nuclear accident, and they believe they have a responsibility to speak for future generations, as this decision will affect them far into the future. Traditional Aboriginal wisdom asks us to think 7 generations ahead when making decisions. But in the case of nuclear waste, this is extended to 7,000 generations. They're going to be carrying a buffalo horn in which water will be collected from each community on their route, as well as from surrounding communities who join them. And in exchange, they'll present a commemorative paddle with their walk logo, symbolizing that we travel through life together, depending on water for our existence. By the time they reach Regina, their buffalo horn will contain water from communities all across Saskatchewan, representing how water unites us all. They're also carrying a sacred staff passed on to them from the seven grandmothers that walked three provinces on the walk of the rivers to raise awareness of protecting the water. And everyone is invited to join them for any distance, great or small, along the route. All ages are welcome, but under 18, accompanied by an adult. And you can email the Committee for Future Generations, that's all one word, at gmail.com for a copy of the itinerary. They need donations of water, food, camping gear, tents, sleeping bags, cash. They were using PayPal, but there's been kind of a glitch with the PayPal, so you can go to that email site to find out how to make your donation. There's T-shirts available.
Great T-shirts.
Mother and child painting has been donated by Dene artist Marius Paul. Did you see that?
I met Marius.
Wow.
And I had a wonderful time talking to Marius, and he played the guitar for me. I recorded the song that he created, actually, so it'll be out later.
And there's another T-shirt, Wake Up, in four languages, Cree, Dene, French, and English. Sizes medium and large, available for $30, and you can send your check to the Committee for Future Generations, Box 155, Beauval, Saskatchewan, SOMS0M0G0. Further information, call 288-2079 or 288-3157.
I think there's extra large, too.
Okay. They don't.
I saw them. Okay.
Okay. Now let's... Carry on.
I can talk a little bit about, you know, why I went. I was invited to go up because of Amnesty International and because they wanted some information about the possibility of how to begin asking questions when a corporation or a government comes to them, to an Aboriginal community, to talk about using the land and using the resources. There are human rights standards that are local and global that include free and prior informed consent and the duty to consult with communities all over the world for the use of their land, for the use of their resources. So basically that's why I went to talk about that, about the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and what it says in it about the duty to consult, and also to talk about what their rights are and you know, the fact that they have the right to say yes, they have the right to say no. If they decide, if a community decides that they want to work with a corporation or with the government, they have a right to say yes on their conditions according to their tradition and their culture and their spirituality. And that's all included in these declarations and in the concept of free prior informed consent. They should never have to pay for any information as well. So that's why I spoke. And on the trip, I did take with me one of the keynote speakers, who was Dan Lindsay from Regina. And Dan's been on the show in the past. And we've had Max Morin and Debbie and Dan to talk about what the forum was like in Beauval. And so Dan was asked to come back and speak in Pine House because the people up there wanted as much information as possible in order to make an informed decision about whether or not they wanted this. And this is something that's occurring currently in a number of northern communities. They're looking to getting information, getting as much as they can from both sides so that they can make an informed decision. Who else did I take? Oh, I took Bruno Harnani with me. And Bruno's been on the show in the past with Susanna Duranger. And they talked about the community development work that Bruno had been doing in Nepal. And since Bruno was an Indigenous man from Lima, Peru, I thought it would be a wonderful way to connect the northern community with Bruno and give them an opportunity to meet each other. And he had an absolutely wonderful time. And Debbie Morin's mom and dad took him in and gave show. And it was wonderful because he went to Mass. They took him to Mass on, it's a very Catholic community in Beauval. And they went to Mass on, what was it, Tuesday morning, I think. And they went to meet the priest who was originally from Quebec, who spoke to Bruno in his mother tongue of Spanish because he had spent a number of years working, I think, in Argentina and Bolivia in the church. And Bruno was absolutely thrilled by that. So we had a wonderful time when we went on Tuesday morning to, or was for Tuesday afternoon, I guess, to Pine House, there was about a third of the community there. There were speakers from Métis communities. There was, Dan was speaking. Max Morin spoke, according to what he had learned from the people in Beauval when they had their forum, that this is something they did not want to entertain. There was a lot of questions, and it was an incredibly informative forum that took place. And during the forum, we lost power twice because it was a big thunderstorm, and people were standing outside in the rain and coming back and forth and talking, and we were fed well, and we were welcomed so warmly, and I had an absolutely wonderful time. And then Wednesday morning, we drove back, and they drove back to Pine House Wednesday morning. There was a number of people went. Debbie and Max and quite a few people from Beauval joined with a number of people. I'd say it was probably maybe a dozen or 20 people that left Pine House on Wednesday morning to take the walk south. And they will be collecting people, and they will be collecting signatures on their petitions. And apparently the community of La Loche had already made a decision that they don't want nuclear power in Saskatchewan. And as they walk south, there's a lot. If you want to find out what's really going on a daily basis, you can go to those two Facebook sites. Mm-hmm. And the one is the Committee for Future Generations on Facebook, and the other one is it's not titled that, although it's hosted by the committee. It is the
Say No.
Just Say No. No, it's Say No to Nuclear Waste in Saskatchewan. Say No to Nuclear Waste. And the other one is the one that you found, and that's 7,000 Generations.
Right.
So those are two Facebook pages you can go to find out what's happening, find out how you can help.
I noticed you brought back an article from the Star Phoenix.
I did, yes. The Star Phoenix did.
Which was that?
I didn't bring it with me. Mm-hmm. They did a big article, about a quarter page, on this whole issue, and about the walk. The Saskatoon Star Phoenix did. The other thing you might want to tell them about, Jim, is you got some information there from the Facebook page that while we were there on the Tuesday and Dan was speaking, Max Morin got a call from a woman in Germany who has a radio station, and he turned on his BlackBerry speaker and recorded the whole forum as much as he could get. And had that broadcast live in all throughout Europe. So this forum went all through anywhere where she was broadcasting. I did get some of it. And we will put it on our podcast here. I took a little recorder with me. It was my first time using it. I'm not sure I got it all, but I know I got some of it. And then there were comments on the Facebook page that came from Jordan and Australia about this issue. So this is really interesting that technology enables a tiny little community with about 600 to 700 people who have concerns about this, and it's broadcast all over the world. I was so impressed with that.
Yeah,
and you being the techie, you probably would be too.
Well, yeah, I'm impressed by the fact that that the meeting was actually broadcast by this woman in Germany.
Right.
You know, that is wild. That is wild in terms of technology.
Yeah.
The website looks like www.blogtalkradio.com.
That's it. Yeah.
And her name is Claire, with an E, C-L-A-I-R-E, Kaiser,
right,
spelled in the normal way.
Right. Okay, so
that would be worthwhile listening to.
Yeah. So if anyone has any questions, you can contact Jim or I. You can go to the Facebook pages and you can find out what's happening. They will be arriving in Regina on May 16th, I believe. And there will be that long walk down the Green Mile to the legislature.
You mean August 16th?
I'm sorry. Why did I say May?
I'm not sure.
I was like, that's a long walk.
Yeah.
That's my old woman brain kicking in again. August 16th, they're planning on being here. We'll keep you updated for sure. Like next week, we'll let you know where they are and everything. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to join them, say in Moose Jaw or partway here, I don't know if they'll be going through Moose Jaw, but we'll keep you updated on everything. You can join them and walk in with them. There'll be a lot of people with them by the time they get here. And you can be there to sign the petitions if you feel like it and support this cause. So, Margaret, let's talk about Margaret now.
Well, that's exciting what you just talked about, because August 16th in Regina, there's a few of the agencies that are hosting a gathering over at the Dojack Center, a healing gathering. So there's going to be a lot of healers there. And,
wonderful.
And that whole week from Monday to Thursday, so they'll arrive at a... Wow,
well, maybe they'll be exciting. Able to come out and meet the walkers.
Yes, who knows? It's an exciting time for Regina. They bring healers in from different areas of Canada, and I think even from the States. But still, I think it's a good thing. And you know, over at our office at All Nations Hope, we're bringing in somebody in at our next staff meeting to talk about recycling. And you know, it
is an
important.
Environmental issue for sure.
Yes, and so you know, our concerns, and we're interested in this, and certainly we'll support it. And I'm happy that you know there is a small community, and technology can. You know, share the information right across the world, because there's a lot of other groups that are probably struggling with similar issues.
Yeah, and Clean Green Saskatchewan is sort of the umbrella group. There's a number of other groups underneath of it, and they are a part of Clean Green Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. I might add that there's a lot of support through that organization. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing I'd like to mention, since you raised that issue about recycling, is currently... the environmental factors are becoming very commonly known as a human right.
Yes.
The right to clean water, the right to clean housing and housing that's safe and secure, you know, the right to food and that sort of thing. So this is becoming very strongly recognized as a human right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and you mentioned that the healers and what's happening will be occurring at Dojack.
Yeah.
For those people who don't know what Dojack is, how would you like to tell us?
Well, it's a youth facility, but a detention youth facility, but it has nothing to do with what's happening there.
Okay.
They let us use their grounds to do ceremony. So there's sweat lodge that happens there on a monthly basis. Part of the programming that I'm talking to you about today is the elders and the workers take people out there who are involved with the they call them claimants, who are in the courts right now going through residential school claims.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah, our program provides emotional support to the claimants. And so part of that is they'll take them out to the grounds and there's sweat lodge ceremonies that take place out there. So, but it's just the grounds that are being used and accessed, so it has nothing to do with the Dojack Detention Center, although they have their own sweat lodge ceremony within those grounds, I've heard.
Right.
I haven't been in the youth detention facility.
Not for a long time.
For a while,
no.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was in there, my early years doing HIV and AIDS.
Oh, that's why, yeah. Okay.
And visiting. But other than that, I believe they, but it's exciting because, again, it's we're looking at providing opportunities for healing through what was provided once by our ancestors and really helped us in moving forward in some of the issues that we face.
I lost my notes.
Oh.
Where's my notes, Jen?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, Margaret has my notes. You have my notes there. Okay, you can use my notes.
All right.
Okay. So continue on. All right.
Well,
and we have had conversations in the past about the residential school program, like the support program, and the when you were on with Ken Ward, actually, too.
Mm-hmm.
So now... Go ahead and tell us about this, because that's sort of coming to an end, isn't it?
Well, it is not. Here we go. The Indian Residential Schools, it's the health support worker program. It's being offered in about 10 different locations in Saskatchewan, but also across Canada there's different programs that are taking place too. But it's a program that's providing emotional support to individuals who have made claims to the government around the residential schools. And so, you know, one of the claims is the common experience payment, which is a payment that is going out to every individual who has attended the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they are filing further claims or not, that's certainly up to them. But that deadline is coming up September 19th, so some of the work that we're doing is to get, there's about 26,000 claims in Saskatchewan that... 26,000 claims that could be made in Saskatchewan, and so they have estimated that 23,000 have made claims for the common experience payment. So there's like 3,000 out there that haven't claimed. So some of the work that we're doing in Regina here in area is to promote and advertise and provide services to the people who haven't claimed. So to us at Anhan, that fits right into our area of work, because it's the people who are probably in a correctional center in jail who haven't filed. It could be some of our homeless people, yes. Yeah. So, you know, we're targeting places like the Carmichael Outreach, SWAP, right. You know, agencies, some
mental
of the
health agencies.
Yeah, mental health, the methadone clinics, right. Some of those places where people probably don't have information about the common experience payment. Mm-hmm. And also our staff are developing relationships with these individuals early on in this whole process. So when they file, they'll have contact with them from now till when they actually come up, you know, to the payment or when is released. Mm-hmm. So they can provide them that emotional support. And you know, our program's really developed into a lot of different areas. For instance, you know, I talked earlier about the Sweat Lodge ceremony. We're providing that opportunity for individuals on a weekly basis over at our office to take them out to the grounds to take part in a ceremony.
Are you getting many people wanting to join that?
There is. We take out people every week to that.
Oh, okay.
We also have the healers coming in from Eagle Moon, which are providing a ceremony.
Eagle Moon Health Office, right?
Yes. And White Raven from Fort Capel comes in and provides some energy healing too. So a whole variety. Our elders are there on a regular basis, on a daily basis, to provide you know, cultural support. Our workers are there providing support around people who are claimants and people who are yet to claim, and they also are attending hearings on a regular basis and for people who have went to the next step, which is the IAP process, which is the next, besides having the common experience payment, there's also the independent assessment process, and that's the IAP process. And that process is a little bit more invading on an individual, because they have to talk about and write down, it's written down, what happened to them at the schools, if they were sexually abused or physically abused, and a little bit more, because some of our people have never talked about what has happened to them in the schools. And so when you take it into a system like the courts and you're looking for justice, there's a lot of legalities that have to be followed. And, you know, in terms of even talking about it, you need that support from a worker for emotional support, but you also need some cultural support, and whether it's, you know, spiritually to be healthy. You know, the elders are there offering their prayers and their support throughout that process, because it's a very invading process, they'll say.
Yes.
In terms
yes.
of talking about it, hey?
Yes.
And something
yes.
you might have not talked about for since it happened.
You may know? Never have
yes.
mentioned it.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. In this scenario of being, is it sort of in a courtroom, or is it in a like a boardroom or something where you would have the opportunity to tell your story? Is there any type of cross-examination? Is
yes,
there any
there
questioning?
Is. Yes. And I'm hoping that some of the one of our workers will come on one of the shows and give you a more detailed layout of what happens. But the court hearings are scheduled by the system, and they happen in the hotels. So some of them are at the Regina Hotel, the Ramada Hotel.
I think maybe Ken mentioned that last time, yeah.
And they do have a place set up for breakout periods, and they have a place that you can take and talk with the individual. But, you know, certainly providing that support is important. It's something, again, and it is cross-examination that happens. And so, you know, the questions that lawyers are asking the individuals are probably, you know, really something that they
that's where you get the invasive issues going on, I would think.
Yeah.
Have you been in attendance at any of these in the
no.
past?
No. The workers are the only ones that can be there.
Okay.
And they can only they can't speak during the hearing.
Right.
They have to just sit there and be support to the individual, the claimant. But during the breaks and before the hearing and after the hearing, they can be there supportive
right.
to them and refer them on to different areas of professional counseling if needed,
right.
or they can
right.
access the elders and some of the, right. the Aboriginal healing ceremonies that we are knowledgeable about in the city of Regina here in area.
I'm so glad to hear that this is happening and that this program is running, because in the past, in the work that I've done, I've known of people who, during the beginning of this process of receiving any kind of payment for pain and suffering in the past, there have been some fairly negative consequences for some people who didn't have the support.
Yes.
So I'm glad that this is occurring. This is yes. so incredibly important.
Yeah, so it's important for us to get the word out that anyone who has not filed, you know, we're trying to go into the different community agencies and just do some one-on-one with individuals. You know, there's a lot of fears around even applying for the Common Experience
right.
payment because some people think they'll get cut off their social assistance mm-hmm. if they get a payment, or mm-hmm. maybe their grandchildren will get taken away. You know, they have all these different fears that are really, you know, that can be alleviated and talked about, because those are things that won't happen.
Right.
You know, if you are on assistance, you can still be on assistance and get this payment.
Okay, and we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break.
Right.
Yes, we are. I was just busy looking at some music on YouTube and stuff like that, and all of a sudden I realize it's time. So we'll be right back and we'll play some music for you. Here we go. I was looking on YouTube for some appropriate music, and I found Native American Indian flute and shamanic drums.
That was nice and relaxing. It almost put me to sleep.
As a matter of fact, that's in the title, dash, relaxation.
Oh, great. Thanks, Jim. And welcome back to Human Rights Radio. And I'm Mona Hill, your co-host here with Jim Hutchings. And today we have Margaret Poitras on our show, and we're having some wonderful conversation about her agency, All Nations Hope AIDS Network, and the work that they're doing for the Indian Residential School Health Support Worker Program. And this has to do with common experience payments from the Canadian government and the independent assessment process and what type of supports they have for people who have either registered their claims, who have attended residential school in the past, or are missing out on the opportunity because they were there but they maybe are not aware that they are eligible for a payment. Whether or not this payment is going to make a difference in their lives, mm-hmm. I think it would be up to the individual person as to how mm-hmm. What kind of difference it might make.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, that's certainly something that this program has been put in place in Saskatchewan to achieve in terms of reaching the people, to help them through their journeys and, support them emotionally during a time when they have to maybe bring up things that they've never talked about for many, many years that they're buried deep down inside. And so to us it's important. We look at some of the programming that we offer at All Nations Hope, and we always want to get to the root causes of where people are, because we believe that's where the true healing will happen and they can move forward in life. And right. So to us this fits right into our philosophy of the way we want to work programming in our network.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for the benefit of those who are not familiar with the Indian residential schools, the whole system, why this has occurred, maybe you'd like to give us a little bit of a background on some of the things that did happen. I think it's really important that we do understand this, mm-hmm. because I know that there are some people who don't understand why people are being offered this money just because they went to a residential school, mm-hmm. that there have been some there's a serious fallout for many, many people who mm-hmm. went. If you don't mind, could you just get into that a little bit and let us know about
sure.
that?
Yeah, it'll tie right into some of the services that we're offering right now right. at our network. People were put into residential schools early in their right from kindergarten to grade 12, taken out of their communities, put into other communities or other or places where schools were established within the different areas of Saskatchewan. So in those schools, they were run by church-affiliated groups, and there was all types of abuse that happened there, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. I just heard of a story. We went to a management meeting in Prince Albert last month, and they were talking about some of the experiences, and one of the ones that stuck out in my mind and I never even heard of before is that when people were left-handed, they wrote with their left hand. Well, what would happen there was something evil about writing with your left hand, so they would tie that child's hand behind their back and make them write with their right hand. Mm-hmm. And there was even incidences where people were shocked if they used their, like electrically shocked if they used their left hand to write. I never heard that story before. But things like that happened from anywhere from sexual abuse to physical abuse. Again, they were told not to talk their language.
To a lot of people if they were speaking their own language?
They would get physically abused and mm-hmm. punished. Mm-hmm. And so that was not allowed. And so there's lots of stories around that. And people can search the websites too, and there's lots of informational personal right. stories about what happened at the schools, and this is what's happening in the courts. They're bringing that out. There's certain degrees of abuse that they're getting paid, like if depending on what level of abuse that they experience, that's mm-hmm. what the courts are basing their money payments out on. But for us, it's much more than the money. It's about helping people heal and stopping some of that abuse from going on to our next generations to come. So some of the work that we're doing at All Nations Hope that will follow up with that is that we have right now Cree classes are being offered at our network on a two times per week.
Is that being attended well?
Well, it just started. So,
okay.
Yeah, and I'm attending. I've never attended a residential school, but I am a child of my both my parents attended.
And that's another important aspect, Margaret.
Yes.
You know, the fallout that affects generations, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so if your family member, if your mother or your father or both were attendees, it could affect you very negatively in your life.
Yes, and you know, they took away a lot of our spirituality and told us our drumming and our singing and our dancing was evil. And that is the way our ancestors honored the Creator and worshiped the Creator and gave thanks the Creator for the work that He's doing in our lives. And our ancestors were very spiritual. Some of the programs, our foundation at All Nations Hope, is built on spirituality, and we're open to all nations. All types of spiritual leadership is acknowledged and respected at our network. And so for us, it's important when we begin working with the people that we wake them up spiritually too. We give them access to the elders. We have a smudging ceremony that happens every morning at 10 a.m., and everybody's welcome to take part, whether they're in the community or they're accessing some of the services or the staff. So, you know, those are types of very, when you walk through our doors, people are welcome there. We don't ask a lot of questions. There's coffee on or tea on all the time, and we feed the people in the morning and in the afternoon. So a lot of different the way our ancestors used to be, that's the way we operate at All Nations Hope. And you know, we're still learning new ways, and I'm always welcome. This morning I welcomed a young man who's going to come in and do some writing with a workshop with the people. And I think
that can
that's
be very,
very
healing.
Oh, yes.
Writing about your experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so that's important to us. And in the dancing, we've still got to bring in some dancing. But certainly with our children's group that we have running right now, we have access to introducing them to the different dances of
that's
the
wonderful.
First Nations people. And we'd like to see the Métis people come in and do some work, too.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, you know, for us, it's awakening our people up to those things that were once part of our traditions, part of our teachings, part of our culture, not only the language we're looking at, but also a way of life, the way we respected one another and helped each other. We didn't.
Yes.
And these are current in all nations, but, you know, a lot of our nations have lost their ways, too. But we want to bring ours back and to help revive the community, the First Nations people, and any other people that want to take part.
And that can and those concepts can be fit into their everyday lives that they're living now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So can anyone come and take your Cree classes?
Yes, they're open.
They're open to anyone.
Yes,
and is it free of charge?
Yes, it's free of charge.
Okay, and how often does that run?
On Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 11.
Awesome.
Yes. So we have a wonderful
young
woman from the First Nations University who is working at our office, Shannon McNabb, and she's operating the Cree classes.
Okay.
Wow, she's such a wealth of information and expertise and teaching, and she's a young woman. It's so nice to see our young people, and we've got quite a few young people coming up and coming that are walking, talking our ways as our ancestors once did, but also walking and talking with a university degree.
Right. The white buffalo of the future, right?
Yes. We're so excited.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a few other people that are at our network doing some placement and doing some work with us. So, you know, we're excited about what is happening in the city of Regina and also in the province of Saskatchewan, you know, with the HIV strategy out and, you know, the funds being released in the communities to do some work. That's important. And, you know, it ties into the work that we're doing and really we'll be meeting a need that has been unmet in our community. You know, we're having a neck bone festival. This is our second one. Ken
what
Ward
kind
worked
of
for
neck
us
bones
last
are
year.
We talking about here?
I always tease people, and they're like, where are neck bones from? And I'll say, they're from a giraffe. We need lots of neck bones.
Well, it's interesting because years and years ago, I learned how to make neck bone curry that comes from the islands, right? So I was really interested to see this neck bone festival. I don't imagine it's curry flavor, but...
Well, you never know. Actually, if you, Mona, bring in you can come
bring
and
a big
enter
pot
your,
and neck bone your curry.
And it's a contest. People,
oh,
we invite people to bring in their neck bones, and we have a contest. And
okay,
but we're also cooking up a lot of neck bones for the people. And, so,
and what type of animals are these neck bones?
It's beef.
Beef, yeah. Eh? Okay.
Yes, I was just kidding. Anyway, yeah, it's a fun time. And so it's a time to meet and greet some of the workers that are doing the Resolution Health Support Program.
Okay.
And there is another program in the city of Regina operated through RAMP, the Regina Alternative Measures Program. Yep, so they've got some workers too. So, you know, we're really trying to meet a need here before September 9th to really get people's in there. Their payment or their common experience payment in. And also there's next year, there's a deadline in September for the IAP process, which is the
other... That independent assessment process.
Which is the more intense... application that people can make, and that one was it's a good opportunity for us to really get to know some of the people that are putting those applications in, mm-hmm. so we can provide emotional support till that time when their court date is up.
Right.
Yeah.
And then support afterwards.
Oh yes.
I would imagine. Yes. You know, it's just as difficult mm-hmm. after you've told your story, because things are going to come out that maybe you haven't even thought mm-hmm. would come out when mm-hmm. you go in to tell a story.
Yes. Yeah. So our Neck Bone Festival, it's happening August 25th from 11 to 4 over at our office on 2735 Fifth Avenue. And it's a time to meet and greet the Indian Resolution Health Support Workers. Bring your favorite neck bone
stew.
We've had them barbecued, boiled, all
and
kinds.
And where do you find these?
Well, it's kind of hard because it's kind of a traditional food that a lot of the First Nations people like, so it's hard to find them. You really have to, before this happens, we're going to have to start stocking up on neck bones.
Okay.
But yeah, because last year we had a hard time getting the numbers that we needed, right? And I know some of the other Aboriginal groups also have neck bone contests, so they're after the neck bones too.
So you could probably go to your local meat store in town here, right?
Yeah, you can find them, at the
independent butcher shops.
I believe they're at Superstore too. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's an opportunity. We invite people to come out and enjoy the day, and it's an opportunity to neck work with other agencies as well.
Great. Very creative.
Yes. But you know, like I really believe that this really fits in with the work that we're doing at All Nations Help around HIV and AIDS. We can, you know, research has shown how residential schools directly impacted people who are HIV positive today that are Aboriginal. So, you know, to us, it's a nice fit for us. It really fits our philosophy of how we want to work with the people and help them through a lot of their issues in life. So, it's a fun time, and the workers are so wonderful. You know, we've got two workers, Selena Britton and Derek Sasakamoose, and two of our elders are Gordon Kiwaitan and Viola Gordon, and such wonderful, caring, supportive staff that we have, and well-rounded in terms of addressing the issues, whether it's homelessness, poverty, addiction, mm-hmm. you know, the HIV, Hep C. So, you know, we also run an addiction, an AA meeting on a weekly basis at our network. So that happens on Tuesdays. And we have men's circles and women's circles.
Mm-hmm.
And the circles are a time for the people to talk to one another and just draw, you know, support from one another. But it's also, they also make it a fun time where they'll sit and do a craft, or they'll mm-hmm. do art, or they'll, you know, bring information to the circles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a sit down all the time. Just
it's not all
get
business.
Down to business. Yeah, let's get down to business and talk about your issues. No, it's more of a networking for the people. So
you mentioned homelessness earlier, and one thing people may not know is that the building that All Nations Hope AIDS Network works out of is also Red Ribbon Place,
yes,
which is an apartment complex. And you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, the apartment, the 12 units are operated from the Saskatchewan Housing Corporation. So there's a manager that's taking applications, but they're always full. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that there's one that's open.
Right.
But it's 12 units, and again, if people are interested, they can contact the manager, and That's through the Saskatchewan Housing Corporation.
Okay.
But we operate the commercial property, which is where we run all our services and our programs out of. So we're providing support to all the residents that come into our office.
This particular residency really is there particularly for people with HIV or hepatitis C, is it? Or I know
in
it
the
used
beginning
to be.
It was, but not okay. no more. It's not, just a, okay. a free for all. Whoever
okay.
applies.
Well, I know with such a terrible incidence mm-hmm. of homelessness here mm-hmm. currently, I can see why it would be.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. Housing
and
is
I
very...
And I understand why no one's leaving.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go.
That's true. And it's regulated rent, so you're not paying $800 to $1,000
right.
for...
Income-based renting.
yeah, it's income-based, yeah.
And they're lovely apartments. I've seen them.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice apartments. And they're close to a lot of different places.
Oh, so yes.
You know, mm-hmm. Just a little bit north of downtown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going 5th and Albert, yeah. just off of that. Yeah.
yeah. There's right corner next stores. To and, yeah, there's a gas bar there.
And a lot of the agencies, like down yeah. Fifth Avenue, like yeah. we've done different events and activities with the agencies. You know, our right. AIDS walk is coming up September 25th.
Too. Oh, right, yes.
So we'll be walking. Yeah. Hopefully the smudge walk will happen around that time, but we're yeah. seeing when that's going to happen in the community, too.
Okay.
It'd be nice if we could all walk together.
What's the smudge walk about?
The smudge walk is organized by RITSIS, Regina Treaty Status, and the Gathering Place, and they organize that. And that's a healing walk through the community, and the elders and are part of that, and they usually end off at Albert Scott the Scott Collegiate High School.
Okay.
And set up teepees there, and it's kind of a nice day, and it's about healing in the community. There's prayers that
coming
go out
together.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and everybody's invited to that. That's usually a huge walk that takes place right in the community.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we've got two walks coming up.
Yeah.
And then the Scotiabank walk.
Yeah, the AIDS walk is September 25th.
Okay. How does one participate in that walk?
They can go on the website and look for the Regina walk and mm-hmm. the AIDS walk website, and they search it, they'll find it, and find out where the Regina walk is, and they can sign up for that, yeah.
Okay, so do you get pledges from people,
yes,
that sort of thing, like any other walk?
Yes, we send out, it's kind of a neat technology, again, Jim will like this one. You can donate online, so
oh,
when you
okay.
find the Regina walk, you'll see the numbers of walkers there. If there's a certain person you want to, if you want to support Margaret Poitras, I'm on there. So
all right.
I've yeah. raised my goal this year. I want to mm-hmm. raise $5,000
okay.
myself mm-hmm. for the AIDS walk, and so mm-hmm. I've sent it out, and I'll continue to advertise and to promote and to ask for every little dollar here
right,
and there.
Right.
But we want to raise a lot of money this year for the AIDS walk,
right.
and that money stays in our community to support the people who are living with HIV or AIDS. So that's important to us. And we're in partnership with AIDS Program South Saskatchewan this year. Again, we were last year. So we provide the walk together every year. So we're happy
great.
About that. Yeah.
Great. I have a question about fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the past few years, there's been a lot of trouble for a lot of agencies in fundraising since the economy has changed.
Mm-hmm.
How is it working for fundraising for AIDS support?
You know, for All Nations Hope, I'll say this right openly, is that we're so busy in programming and services, we don't have time to fundraise as much as we would like to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for us, it's, you know, our organization, we operate our servicing program on what funds we get from the government,
mm-hmm.
whether it's provincial or federal or municipal. And, you know, very little donations come in to support us, and
right.
'cause we don't have time to be doing, you know, and that's something that we need to move forward on in terms of how we would like to do that. And again, technology would really help us in that area. But, you know, we're looking forward, and that's something that we want to focus on is fundraising and using what's out there already.
Yeah. You could even use a volunteer to do volunteer fundraising.
Oh, yes, we could use a
someone
volunteer.
Someone who's technically astute.
Who has, you know, has. And so there's lots of really, really good ideas that we come up with. But, again, we're so busy doing the programming and the services in our network that, you know, our staff are oh wow, I'm just really blessed to have the staff that we do have in terms of their areas of expertise and skills, and I always tell them that I'm glad you opened your gifts from the Creator, because that is what it boils down to, is that, you know, those gifts that we're given, the ability to speak, and like I'm doing today, I always say one of my gifts is
my
voice.
Oh, you sure have that
gift. I'm always talking. Always talking.
You
and,
bet.
And talking all the time. And, you know, that's one of my gifts that I've opened up. So I talk in different avenues all the time, different committees, different groups, different interviews. Whatever comes up, I'm always ready to talk. And, you know, I really speak from the heart in terms of the people that we're working with. It's the people who are, you know, at their most desperate need. They're homeless. They're hungry. They're sick. You know, there's lots of things that are going on in their lives, but there's also hope for them. And that's what, you know, our name is All Nations Hope. And we want to give hope to the people that, you know, there's a different way in life, and that we can help you if you want. And it's a choice that people make, but we're not going to blame or shame you for any of the disease that you may carry or the social conditions that you live in. It's certainly something that we want to address. And so, you know, we're well-rounded in terms of we look at the environment, what's happening in the world today, and we look at what's happening in our communities. And we partner with many, many different agencies in the city of Regina and in the province of Saskatchewan and even in Canada to address what the needs are out there. So it's important to us to be that expert or that skilled person in the area of HIV, AIDS, and Aboriginal people. And research is on our agenda of finding that information out too. So
And speaking of research, do you foresee big changes in terms of population coming into the city, people looking for work, people leaving the reserves, people leaving the northern communities, and what type of research or would you need to be doing to find out whether or not your services will be needed even more than they are now?
Yes. One of the research projects that we're currently doing is called the Aboriginal Track, and that's a Public Health Agency of Canada research that's taken place. We've partnered with the Health Region and with All Nations Hope. And what we're doing is we're going to survey 1,100 Aboriginal people in the city of Regina. It's a pilot study in Canada, the first of its kind. And some of that information about the movement from reserve to city and back and forth, and that will be part of that survey. We'll get that information from that. And that will be probably released maybe next year. I'm not sure what the deadline is.
Okay.
But we haven't started that. That's happening in the late summer, early fall.
Okay.
But it'll take about
year.
Yeah.
So it'll take a couple of years to get this.
Well, it's
by the time you get
it's a number survey, so.
Right. And what will you use those numbers for? What kind of services, or expansion of services?
It'll be all of that. Research is all about, for me, it's about saying what we said already. We said there's a problem with HIV among the Aboriginal people in Regina, but we don't have the numbers. We'll have the numbers.
Okay.
But it's also about changing policy and procedure around some of the institutions, the systems, and the programs that are offering services to Aboriginal people who are at risk, or people who are living with HIV and AIDS right in general. So to me, it's ammunition to go to, say, social services and say, you know, you really need to be providing this service to a person who's positive because it's needed. You know, that kind is ammunition. This is what, you know, this is what the survey says.
Right.
Isn't that a common whatever?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so it'll really help us move that forward. But for us, for doing ATRAC, our buy-in into it is we're providing life to the community. And one of our Aboriginal elders named the survey, and it is about bringing life to the community, because we're not going to only come in and do a survey. We're going to also provide some support. So when the researcher comes in and is doing the surveys, there's going to be access to an elder. It's going to happen in places where organizations, agencies, venues where Aboriginal organizations or support, emotional support will be available.
Okay.
So we're not just going to come in and go out. It's going to be brought in by the community.
Right.
It's going to be within the community.
Okay.
That support will be there before,
and
after,
this will be right through the whole province?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No,
just
in Regina. Just in Regina.
And what about the rest of the province?
Well, this is a federal research program.
So we'll have to get the province in on
They're quite knowledgeable about what's going on with the Aboriginal track. Yeah,
we got what, a minute left, Jim?
Minute and a half.
You want to take it away? We'll say goodbye to Margaret. Tell us again about the Neckbone Festival, and then we'll say goodbye with that.
Okay, it's August 25th from 11 to 4 at 2735 Fifth Avenue, and we're calling it The Place. And it's the Neckbone Festival. So
bring your Neckbone soups and stews and chilies and curries. Yeah, and come out and meet Margaret and meet the workers at All Nations Hope AIDS Network. Thank you so much. It was wonderful to see you again and catch up on the news at Ann Hen.
Thank you very much.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International and follow the links. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to Human Rights Radio, all one word, at that's .podbean.com, and you'll get all our programs. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."